Welcome to Bankless Africa, a podcast by Africans on building and innovating Web3 into a new frontier for the people of Africa. I'm your host, Miss Purple, and each episode, I get together with some wonderful people across the continent and the diaspora to talk, ideate, and dream about the bright future of our people. Stay tuned for another exciting episode.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bankless Africa, and it's always such a pleasure to have more women coming to speak to us here on the podcast about their work, but also just overall about the space as a whole. And today we have the pleasure of having Maya with us today. How are you, Maya?
I'm great. I'm very excited to be on this podcast as well. So thank you so much for having me in advance.
Yes, very, very honored to have you. I know that the first time I spoke to you, I said, I have to get you on the podcast. Doesn't matter what happens, but it had to happen. So I'm really, really glad that we're finally here today and it's finally happening. So to start off, what we usually like to do is we get a bit of a story on our guest to hear about your career path and essentially just how you would, you know, the usual question is, how would you describe yourself? But we want you to tell us your version of your own story. So can you share a bit about, you know, your career path and of course, eventually what piqued your interest about the frontier, everything that you feel comfortable sharing?
Sure. So I'll start by giving a nutshell and then I'll explain. I think it's also really beneficial. A lot of people just give a nutshell, right? And say, oh yeah, this, I did this and I did that and blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot that happens in the background for you to get from one place to another. And I think I always, whenever I'm talking honestly in a situation like this about my career journey, I try and add that. So I'll start with a nutshell and then I'll go into like the thought processes and the framework. So hopefully it can also help other people when they're making their own career decisions. My name is Maya. I'm currently chief of staff at Nestcoin. Nestcoin, it started its life as a venture studio, right? Using crypto to enable economic empowerment in the global south. So we were building loads of different crypto-enabled products. We've since pivoted and refocused around one core product. Another one of our products that we incubated has now spun out. And I'll talk more about those later on. But before becoming chief of staff at Nestcoin, I was a product lead for one of our core products currently called Onboard. So that was, or it rather is, one of the first non-custodial on and off ramping peer-to-peer protocols for the continent of Africa. So I built that from very much idea all the way to launch. And I'm very lucky Nestcoin has a great culture. And so I was given a lot of support and also a lot of autonomy to build that as well. So it was very much me, my engineering lead and my design lead, like sitting, okay, what does this mean? How should this work? Blah, blah, blah. Before that, my career has very much been defined by or around enabling companies to build products and scale into emerging markets. So I always say my career started in Hong Kong, where I was working for a short period of time for a huge, huge Asian conglomerate. And I was in the innovation team. And basically, my boss would come to me periodically and list different industries. So everything from mobile tech to health tech to drones to pharma, everything in between. And he would say, okay, find companies that we can invest in and how we could launch them into Southeast Asian markets and also which Southeast Asian markets we should do so. And that really sparked an interest for me in two things. One is startups and two is emerging markets. And I realized emerging markets are the future. And I went back home to London where I'm from, very much saying the West is dead, long live emerging markets, right? And so from there, I decided, okay, next region of the world I want to learn about is the continent of Africa. And so one day I just booked myself a flight to Kenya. And I was there for 4 months. And I was like, well, I have nothing planned, but I'll figure it out. And I really my family are from the Caribbean, from Barbados originally. And so that was my first time in sub-Saharan Africa. I didn't know anyone. I didn't have anything confirmed. But I just hustled, networked, and I managed to get some really great gigs. So one was working at Carbon, the Pan-African but Nigerian-founded neobank, and I was there helping them launch in Kenya. I helped consult a Tanzanian telecom about building mobile money products for the Muslim community in Tanzania. And yeah, it was amazing. And then from there, I decided I wanted to go back to London and, you know, safety net, blah, blah, blah. So I ended up working for a Western unicorn based in London. I ultimately got positioned into being in charge or the main product person for expansion and localization. And I somehow, during the middle of COVID, convinced the C-suite to let us expand into the Arabic speaking world. So led that expansion, launched us into Arabic, which is our first right to left languages across all platforms and products. And then worked in marketing as a product manager, focused on marketing and ads. And then one day I was like, anyway, I'm done. So I quit. On the side, I'd been really active in being a venture scout. And so I've been speaking and building great networks on the continent. Really, I was focused on helping African founders get foreign investment. And one day, Yele, who's a founder of Nestcoin, came knocking. And as I always say, you'd have to be pretty silly. Well, it depends upon your goals. But if you're really passionate about the continent and you really want to learn how to build or invest and strategically and scale something, especially from Western Africa, Yele is one of the best people I can think of to work closely with. And so I didn't refuse that call. So that's kind of my journey to date. I think the key things I always say to everyone is a few things. So one is know what game you're playing, right? When it comes to your career, there's a few games you can play. You can optimize. So there's four. You can optimize for wealth. You can optimize for status. You can optimize for network, or you can optimize for learnings. And sometimes a job can meet all four, but it's unlikely. Typically jobs will meet more than one though. But know which one you're really optimizing for. Be comfortable, make your peace with that, and know what you're willing to compromise and really go for it aggressively. The other thing is just keep putting yourself out there. Let people know about your interests. So Yele didn't just come knocking to me randomly. It's because someone we both knew that he was looking for a specific person and I was looking for a specific role, and it kind of worked out. I think the third thing is be creative in how you put yourself out there. So do different things. So I started a podcast because I was like, I want to learn more and I want to expand my networks on the continent. And that is a reason I did it, right? Venture scouting was completely different, but how to be creative in whatever you're optimizing for. And finally, right, is just be really, whenever you're considering a job or opportunity, know your master game or the ultimate game you're playing, right? The four I mentioned, but know what really matters to you and optimize for that as well. And where possible, interviews are a great way to also really learn about the employer. And I turned down a job. there was another job offer I had, which paid me over 50% more than what Nestcoin was offering me. But I took Nestcoin because I knew what game I was playing. And yeah, just keep putting yourself out there. Take risks. Every time you take a risk, it becomes easier to take the next one. Asymmetric bets are a real thing as well. And also intentional serendipity. So you can't plan everything, but at least work to be in the right rooms. To put into context, I know my networks are really strong, and I gathered those networks, especially in Nigeria. I gathered a lot of strong networks in Nigeria without ever visiting West Africa. So it's possible. It's not easy, but it's possible. And yeah, I've been talking for a while. Sorry.
Sorry, I also got into it so much because you're dropping gems here. It's mind-blowing because, you know, the whole... Excuse the chicken in the background. It's part of life here. But the different tiers of optimization, it's wild because for a lot of people, you don't contend with the fact that sometimes you may have to separate and figure out which one is more, you know, important to you, and then go for that and hope, or perhaps build yourself an environment that can then be able to accommodate all four. So it's pretty mind-blowing to hear you say that. So I feel like I need a whole a career chat with you, because it's pretty phenomenal how you see things and how you approach them. But speaking of optimization, you have a very, very global experience, right? So from Asia to Africa, the UK, you've been everywhere, you've worked with everybody. Of course, you know, conflating here, but what's the common thread in all of them? Is there a true interconnectedness with everything such that it was so easy for you to just move from one to go to the other? Or did you find it was a very extended period of having to learn and relearn and unlearn different either working environments, different ways of thinking, anything of the sort? Or is everything just exactly the same, especially in the same industry across the globe?
No, it's definitely not the same. So, I mean, for context, so everything I described happened within, it's about a 4-year period, right? And it's not that I had a clear plan. It was more that I just put myself out there, tested new things, and that just helped me realize other things, right? So if I may, I want to answer another question, which you haven't asked, but I want to answer it anyway. And then I'll answer the question that you just asked. So just to go into the point about careers and thinking about your careers, I'll give a very live example. So when I was deciding to join Nestcoin or whether to join another firm or a few other firms, I knew that I was optimizing for a few things. So one was learning. That was the most important thing. The second was network. And then below that, third was status. And I had a clear idea of what that looked like. So learnings, I really wanted to learn what it meant to really successfully scale a business on the continent. Network, I wanted to expand my network in West Africa in particular, but I also wanted to be able to hedge a bit, right? So is there a way I could also expand my network in the West with the right people, right? And I know Yele is incredibly well-respected and connected, and rightfully so. And so I was like, okay, take that hedges. And then the other thing was status. Stand on the shoulders of giants, right? Make your life a bit easier. Where possible, do that. That was my motto up until the beginning of this year, right? And it's correct. Do that where possible, because it 10x's, it accelerates your learning, it makes things slightly easier for you, right? Not everything has to be a struggle. De-risk and de-struggle where possible. And that's kind of how I thought about it. And so, you know, yeah, if I was working in the West, could I earn tons more than I currently am? Hell yes. But I realized, look, I'm sacrificing wealth in the short term, because in the long term, I know I can leapfrog. I know how I can craft this narrative to make myself like jump up the career ladder, even if I was to return to the West. But I don't think I will. But to go back to your question of whether the So was your question, sorry, more around whether from what I've seen around the world, whether it's similar, or was it more in terms of how I thought about going from one place to another?
Yeah, so more the culture, you know, the work culture and the culture specifically behind innovating and, you know, creating new things. Is it the same concept where it's just people who, ooh, I see a problem, I want to fix it? Or is there a different maybe thought process or a different approach to approaching a certain situation, or the different companies you work for? Do they address certain things in different ways, or is it exactly the same? Because, you know, even though it may be the same industry, I often wonder, are we truly connected in that we all have the same ideals, we all have the same concepts of what is what and what is not what? Or is it so completely different that it's a whole learning curve to try to get to know a whole new area and the people and how they work, how they think, and everything in between?
It's definitely a new learning curve. But the more I do it, the easier that curve becomes to climb. So for example, in Asia, in Southeast Asia, in Hong Kong at the time, Hong Kong wasn't as technologically advanced at the time. Things have changed rapidly. It's becoming in its own right a mini hub for crypto, right? That was not the case really when I was there. But things have changed rapidly. Hong Kong or Southeast Asian culture, you work hard, like incredibly hard. Some would say unhealthily hard, at least from a Western perspective. It seems so. Very hierarchical as well. Very much so. And you could definitely see it. Respect is a very big thing in Southeast Asia. There's a lot of similarities, I guess, in many ways between Southeast Asia and my experience on the continent. I think on the continent, I've worked with people who worked in companies, I think, who embrace in some form a Western approach to company building and Western mindset to culture as well. And so I don't know if I've had a true local, traditional, you know, whatever you want to call it, experience. If I'm being honest, I've been very, very lucky throughout my entire career journey to have bosses who've always been supportive, have always pushed me forward. And that is a blessing that I thank. I don't know who's looking out for me up there, but thank you. Continue to do so, please. So there are differences, but there's also similarities. I always say I think there's more similarities across different emerging markets than between a single emerging market and the West generally. And that is because of a few things. So the West went through economic development and industrialization at a very different time, very, very different time, right? Very different circumstances as well. And so it's not truly comparable. Like, their stage of development is very different. In contrast, if you think about many emerging markets, let's say China went through mass industrialization in the last 60 or well, more than 60 years, but it's fairly modern history, and other parts of Southeast Asia are going through something similar. And also with emerging markets all have the common thread, right? And common external global structures of the fact that we were all former colonies. And I know colonization ended officially. A lot of these countries gained independence, 60 odd years ago. But legacies of that still exist when it comes to the global system and how the global financial, political, economic, etc. system is set up. And so I think there's a lot of similarities. In the context of many emerging markets, a lot of these countries were created by colonial powers. And so loads of different peoples from different ethnic groups just kind of arbitrarily pushed together. And I think that is a cultural factor that plays out in some emerging markets that can feed into the environment that you live in, the way you work, the way people engage, the challenges, etc. And so when I look at somewhere like, for example, Nigeria, the countries I look at and say, okay, well, I think there's some similarities are places like Indonesia, maybe China, maybe India, but I think Indonesia in particular, in terms of different populations, in terms of independence, in terms of potential, etc., in terms of just sheer mass of people, to be honest, as well. So that's how I think of things personally. I think we went through the initial phase in the context of the continent where we were looking a lot to the West, and trying to almost carbon copy and slightly adapt to the local circumstances. We've gone through that. People are now adapting more. I think there are even more opportunities for cross emerging markets learning, and that's starting to come into play very slowly in the past really year and a half. And that's a really exciting trend for me. Very, very exciting. And yeah, a lot to learn, a lot to see. But there is definitely huge differences in the way people work, the way people engage with each other amongst different cultures and countries, even if it is still within tech.
I think I mainly ask that question because I've noticed that I think we forget that, you know, we just assume that because I understand this to be this way, you should too. And we completely forget that there are people out there who think completely differently. Not only that, they speak completely different languages, you know, especially in this space. A lot of people tend to assume we're all exactly the same. So just because some of us are able to speak the English language does not mean we all think in English, you know, and that makes a big, big difference because it also affects how we, when you build an app or when you build a certain protocol or a dApp or whatever, usually you tend to build it for English speakers. But, you know, when you come to the continent and you see how many different languages there are in just a single country, it then begs the question, are we truly building for ourselves or are we simply building to show the rest of the world that we can? Because if most of the people here in my country cannot use even something as simple as MetaMask because it's in English. But maybe we would have to go through, you know, tutorials for people to be able to have muscle memory. So it would be not, it wouldn't really be, I understand how to use this, but rather I know that this is how it's supposed to work because that's what they showed me. So I just always wonder about that. If we keep that in mind when we create things and we put things together. But it's interesting to hear that, you know, to be reminded that we are different. And even though we can celebrate being able to connect with each other, we're completely different. And it's okay for us to embrace that and to create specifically with that in mind. But to get straight into the crux of the entire conversation, chicken and egg debate. And it's essentially, do we focus our energy on creating and providing off-ramping solutions, or do we build systems that can then operate directly from blockchain? By that, I mean, do we just help people be able to work with, you know, with both crypto and fiat to be able to move one to the other seamlessly? Or do we build ecosystems where I can just go shopping with my crypto? Which one needs to come before the other here?
Oh my gosh, without hesitation, the on and off ramps need to come first. And the reason I say that is, unless someone is trying or planning to do a Russian Bolshevik style revolution, communist revolution, or equivalent, maybe we'll call it crypto revolution, in many different countries, fiat is here to stay. It's not truly going to disappear. It may adapt in new ways and learn from cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, but it's not going away. And in particular, like, it takes a while for people also to adapt to any new technology. And so if we truly want to cross the chasm when it comes to cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, we can't separate ourselves from the real world. We have to have those on and off ramps, right? And even, for example, with being able to, let's say, use your crypto card to buy something in a store online, in reality, the seller will probably want that settled in a fiat currency. It's unlikely they're going to want it in a cryptocurrency unless, you know, maybe they're open to stable coins, right? And that is a big maybe. And I don't think that enough people or sellers are truly for us to say, let's just go straight with crypto rather than building on and off ramps. And on and off ramps are so fundamental. And to be honest, they're largely ignored because they just don't seem like the sexy part of crypto, but they are the infrastructure of crypto in many ways, and the cryptoverse and Web3 as a whole. They are the key infra, or one of the key infras, in my opinion, at least.
I like how you said it at the end that, you know, sometimes we dismiss it, and I get it. I have seen it for sure. Most people tend to feel like, oh no, but you can just, you know, just use your crypto. And it's like, realistically, that doesn't always happen. But I'm asking this in this way because I would like you to tell us a bit about the Nescoin off-ramp protocol.
Yeah, so the Nescoin on and off-ramping protocol. So we realized quite quickly that on and off-ramps are fundamental, that we want people... So in many ways, one thing I always say firstly is that, in my opinion, crypto and Web3 largely has been an amazing technological solution without a true problem to address. And that's because a lot of the crypto narrative has traditionally focused on the West, where, to be honest, cryptocurrency may make things slightly easier, but it's not transformational. It's not a big enough gap or a big enough... increase and improvement that the average person will say, okay, let me actually now try this, learn about this, etc. And that's why in reality in the West, the majority of engagement with Web3 and crypto is largely speculative or ideological. And whereas if you look at emerging markets, there's a lot to be done in many emerging markets because we're not as advanced when it comes to development stage, right? And so there's a lot of infra that is missing. There's a lot that isn't working as well as it should or could. And there is a true problem or true problem areas that crypto can truly solve. And so that's why I believe that crypto the problems for Web3 and crypto are predominantly in emerging markets. And therefore, when we think of Web3 and crypto, we then have to think, okay, how do these people, someone sitting in Kenya, how does someone sitting in Zimbabwe, how does someone sitting in South Africa, in Nigeria, in Ghana, in the Ivory Coast, how do they actually get access to this world of Web3? It's not enough just to say, hey, here it is, off you go. They need to go and go from their local currency into whatever that Web3 or cryptoverse is. How is that happening? And we kind of realized that was a massive gap or a massive problem. If we look at, let's say, Nigeria, the predominant on and off ramp is Binance P2P. But Binance P2P, of course, is linked to Binance. If, let's say, another Web3 company or project wants to really expand into Nigeria specifically, who do they use? Do they build their own on and off ramps? On-off ramping is a business in itself. Like, that's a lot to manage. How do they go about it? There are many on and off ramping providers that say they do satisfy, they can serve Nigeria, but in reality, they don't truly. And so that's kind of the basis of where we started off when we said, okay, let's build this on-off ramping protocol, because it comes down to access, right? Crypto can truly benefit and revolutionize and improve the continent of Africa, in my opinion, but we have to give people a way to actually access it first. And so that's how we started, right? In reality, in many places on the continent, there is a certain regulatory environment, which means that direct on and off ramps. So for example, me buying crypto directly with my card or going onto my banking app and buying crypto, it's just not possible. And so that's why peer-to-peer is fundamental and really important, not just on the continent, but in many emerging markets. And peer-to-peer also makes it easier to scale into different markets as well, because rather than, for example, if I wanted to scale into Kenya, I'd have to go to Safaricom and say, okay, how can I integrate with M-Pesa, etc. Rather than having to do that across 54 different countries, you can now just say, all I need is people who are liquidity providers in each country. And so what that means is all I need is merchants or liquidity providers who have enough crypto and also have the relevant local fiat, who could then connect with buyers or sellers, with customers actually, to complete a transaction, so that one person sends crypto and the other person receives the relevant fiat. And that's all you need to really scale a peer-to-peer protocol, an on-off ramping protocol. On top of that, we realized that actually there's a huge gap and interest in non-custodial solutions. And that bet was right, given what happened with FTX, given what's happened with Genesis isn't custodial, but, you know, there's been a number of centralized offerings and crypto projects that have collapsed, and not in a small, quiet way, but in a huge, roaring way in many ways. And so we made an early bet on non-custodial solutions. And that is why we started by building our on and off ramping protocol for non-custodial solutions, so that someone sitting in, I don't know, someone sitting in Kenya, for example, could say, actually, I want to top up my MetaMask. I want to put USD stablecoins in my MetaMask. They can easily go from Kenyan shillings to that through us. On top of that, we started off by focusing on stablecoins. And that's because when we look at cryptocurrencies, my belief is that stablecoins will be the most revolutionary form of cryptocurrency or subsegment of cryptocurrencies for the continent. Because unfortunately, due to global economic systems, many emerging markets, like we have on the continent, suffer from difficulties accessing foreign exchange. And then as a result, they are forced to place capital control measures, which makes it difficult for average people in their country or their citizens to access these foreign exchange. But the world speaks in English and it trades in USD. And so if you can't access this, you are almost cut off from a huge part of the world, a huge part of the global financial system. And USD in particular, USD-based stablecoins, really help to open back up that access in a way that we haven't really seen before. They also mitigate some of the volatility that you may see in other cryptocurrencies, because in theory, and this is why you have to be really careful about the stablecoin you use, it's pegged one-to-one with the US dollar. And so that's how we were thinking, or what we were thinking about when we started the on and off ramping protocol journey, so to speak.
You mentioned something there that has got me slightly curious, and it could be completely off topic here, but is there a possibility that this on and off ramping protocol will have some sort of foreign market trading accessibility in the future? Because you mentioned that it's difficult for an African to access any of that. And I know that we have this conversation a lot in Bankless Africa, talking about how, you know, when you have access to opportunities, you can create a life for yourself that a lot of other people don't have the ability to do so. And if, say, you're a young person who receives a certain allowance from your parents and you can have the ability to access foreign markets and perhaps, you know, trade or invest or whatever it is that you want to do with it, but you have the experience, you have time when you're younger to experiment and fail and make mistakes and learn, and then when you're older you feel you have somewhat of a stride. So is Nescoin looking, or perhaps thinking, or is it something that's a bit further off into the future that, you know, you're looking to perhaps explore?
So at the moment it's not on our roadmap. At the moment, we are predominantly looking at infra and providing the initial access. Maybe one day that will be something we do or we look into. But at the moment, there's so much still to do from the infra level and just to provide pure access level before we even get to that stage. Because there are a lot of companies, right, that do offer that. But the problem is that for people on the continent, they can't even get to that stage because there aren't sufficient on and off ramps. There aren't sufficient on and off ramps for them to get to that stage. Like, once you have USD stablecoins, there's ways in which you can play around with that. There are products that help you then match that to USD or actually then use that to try and convert that into actually investing in the stock market in the US. But at the moment, that's not, that's a whole company in its own right. And that's not what Nescoin is going after at the moment.
That's fair. That's fair indeed. I can imagine it's a lot to just even comprehend, but I hope I'm planting a little nugget of an idea in somebody's brain out there, because, you know, these kinds of access as a whole is so important. It's so paramount to helping people to feel comfortable in innovating and creating, because you feel like you have access to opportunities, access to ideas, or, you know, a whole bunch of other things as well.
Also, our on and off ramping protocol is live and has been live for a little while. It's called Onboard. So if you Google onboard.xyz, it will come up. And as an individual, you can use that. You can connect your MetaMask to it, etc. At the moment, though, we are predominantly supporting NGN to stablecoin. We will eventually expand to support other currencies as well, but we're not quite there yet. So if you have Naira and you want to on-ramp or off-ramp, we're here and we're ready to be used.
What will it take for the broader adoption, not just of Onboard, but also of all other Nescoin products, but also of the entire space as a whole? And then, of course, to play devil's advocate, is it even necessary for us to focus so much energy trying to get more people to get on, or are we good enough as we are? Is this a nice little number of people in Web3? Are we saying that we don't need any more people? We can keep going as we are at the moment.
I think one of the things that will help is, one is obviously always greater education, right? So making it clear that not all cryptocurrencies were born equal. So what I mean by that is that there are shitcoins, for example, which are volatile. They're high risk, they can very occasionally be high reward. Then there are more stable and utility-based coins, right? So in my opinion, think of the likes of Ethereum, right? Ethereum has core utility behind it as a coin in itself. And then there are stable coins, which in my opinion are in a category of their own. I think it's important that the average user recognizes that they're not all cryptocurrencies are born equal. And that would then mean that when we're thinking of, hey, look at crypto, look at this Web3, blah, 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 we can kind of subcategorize and recognize that, oh, actually, it's not all of crypto, it's a specific part. I think the other aspect that needs to come into play as well is the way in which products are built. So a lot of the initial builders in the world of Web3, not so much here on the continent, but in the West, were engineers. And there, as a result, has been this fixation with jargon. And now what we're seeing is abstraction of some of that jargon and that difficulty. So, for example, the idea of having to sign a transaction or the idea of having to pay gas fees in the cryptocurrency or the native token for that blockchain, right? That's a bit difficult and it's a bit weird. If you think about it, if I want to buy USDT and I'm doing it on Solana, on the Solana blockchain, it's not natural to think, okay, I have to also think and make sure I have enough Sol or Solana, right, in itself to complete that transaction. And that's an abstraction that is happening slowly and surely, but that will make it easier for people to actually use and engage with the cryptoverse and the world of Web3. And these trends are, as I said, are happening. And I think those are the two key things that will help people really embrace Web3, at least in my opinion, in emerging markets. In the West, that's a whole different kettle of fish. And I think that's because of the core reasons for people using crypto in the West is speculative and ideological. And that is not always the most sustainable. Those aren't the most sustainable things, especially as the world goes into economic crisis. People don't have the luxury for ideology, and speculation becomes less and less risky as well in nature. So, yeah, those are the two things, in my opinion.
From your experience working in the different emerging markets, you know, there have been a lot of, I'll use the word speculation, but also ideologies about what to expect in this coming year, that things are going to be quite terrible. And of course, a lot of this is based off of the US economy and what's happening there. So that seems to determine everybody else's stance in terms of how their economies are also going to then respond to that. In your opinion, based off of your experience and, you know, your inevitable connections, what do you think we should expect as the African emerging markets specifically in this coming year or perhaps the next few quarters? I mean, of course, you know, we're just speculating, I guess, here, but more based off of experience and knowledge as well.
Yeah, so honestly, economies are so heavily connected, interlinked. And when you have a huge economy like the US going into an economic downturn, it is difficult for the rest of the world not to do the same. It's unlikely, right? The depth of that depends heavily on how the US government controls the policies they put in place, right? But with the West and different countries in the West going through economic downturns or about to enter economic downturns, it's unlikely that the continent or all of the continent will be able to escape that fully. The extent to which the continent is impacted, I don't know. I'm not an economist. I'm not going to pretend to be one either. But that's in the fiat world. In the crypto world, what we're seeing now, as time goes on, crypto winters and downturns will be more closely linked to what's happening in the fiat and TradFi economy, right? And that's just because of the growing influence of two things. So one is that there's a growing influence of institutions when it comes to the cryptoverse, right? So, for example, banks, big traditional players, etc. And then the other factor is that, of course, when the TradFi or the traditional financial world is in an economic downturn, it means there's less money. So there's less money to say, okay, let me, not even just from a speculative perspective, but there's less, people have less money to put into USD-based stable coins to save, for example. So yeah, I like increasingly they will be very closely linked. So look, this is very normal. Every economies are cyclical. They go through booms, they go through busts. Hopefully this is not, for the, at least from a global perspective, this is not a bust. So it's expected, to be honest. And from a crypto perspective, bull markets are truly great in many ways, because bear markets are truly great. In the context of bull market, there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of people just coming in and jumping on the hype. In a bear market, it gives a chance for people to really refocus, reflect, especially as crypto technology is so new. It forces people to go back to fundamentals, which apply across Web3 as well as Web2, etc. So yeah, those are my thoughts.
I think those are well put together thoughts. And even though we may not be experts, I think it's always important to be reminded or to remember that you're right in that everything goes in cycles. I think it's just always so scary when you're in it. For a lot of people where you feel like, I have no idea where to look. I have no idea what to do. Because there's nothing you can do to stop it from happening. You know, it's going to happen. It's going to come for you, whether you want it to or not. And the best thing you can do is just to make sure that you are in a comfortable enough position and that you are making decisions that will not, you know, affect you negatively in the next short while, because you never know how long it's going to last for. And that's the other thing. You can't try to time it and say, oh no, it's only going to be here for 6 months, so I'll be fine for 6 months. Because what happens if it goes on for longer than that? You have absolutely no idea. So I think it's always important just to make sure that we situate ourselves in such a way and we think and approach life in such a way that we understand anything could happen and we need to be ready for whatever. So thank you for sharing that. So as we close off the conversation, I like to ask our guests to give me three words on how you feel about the space overall. Of course, specifically in your line of work and with your career at Nescoin, but also the work that Nescoin is doing, but also mainly across the continent. How do you feel about the entire crypto Web3 space frontier?
I think one of the words that springs to mind is opportunity. And the reason I say that is there's so much still to do in the cryptoverse. There's so much that thoughts, adaptations that need to happen. Two is crypto infrastructure. I think that especially applies to emerging markets. The third word is community. One of the things I love about the crypto Web3 space is how much emphasis these Web3 projects put on community and the power of community.
I agree with you 100% on that last part, because I have seen firsthand people buying their quote unquote community. So take that with a grain of salt. You know, if you hear somebody say we have 20,000 followers, so we have a huge community, always remember, you never know how many of them are real and how many are not. So
thank you for spending another episode with me. Just a reminder that none of what we share is financial advice, only opinions of the individuals that make this show possible. You can use the links in the show notes to do your own research. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening from. We are our own wildest dreams, the hope of our own tomorrow. So until next time, keep innovating.